It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Just in case you missed it, we've got more rain in the forecast and more than just a little bit. For our listeners along the I-81 corridor from Syracuse south to Scranton, storms this afternoon could pack a powerful punch as a cold front swoops through. Kevin Williams spell it out in his forecast coming up. But first up, protecting the homeland. Nearly 50,000 refugees are in this country right now after escaping the Taliban in Afghanistan, and more than a dozen of them show up on terror watch lists. Florida Congressman Michael Waltz.
Every time I don't think this situation can get any worse, it does.
The new Taliban government includes one man on the FBI's 10 most wanted list and four of the five Gitmo detainees let go in that controversial prisoner swap during the Obama administration.
Allowing the Taliban to pick its most wanted, its top draft picks, out of Guantanamo to now see them in charge of what is quickly becoming a terrorist super state is just a slap in the face. And to have this on the week of 9/11, the 20th anniversary, it's just outrageous and frankly, it's unforgivable.
Florida Congressman Michael Waltz says the Taliban in Afghanistan will birth an ISIS caliphate the size of Indiana with an economy the size of Austria. Britain's Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage.
The fact that the Taliban can say, hey, we've just beaten America, you know, America have gone tail between their legs, I think gives great comfort to terrorist organizations all over the world. I think the Western world may well pay a price through terrorist reprisals for many, many years to come as a direct result of this very badly executed decision.
The new interior minister of Afghanistan, he's the head of the Haqqani Network and is believed to be holding at least one American hostage, according to the Associated Press. That man, now in charge of all of law enforcement in Afghanistan. Newly obtained emails show our own State Department obstructed private rescue flights from Afghanistan once the Taliban took over. Army combat vet Corey Mills helped organize one of those flights.
We had an aircraft that was already allocated. Manifest was finished. They were all ready to go. And the State Department, CENTCOM Command, and the Taliban had approved for this flight to leave. And at the last minute, as Americans were getting ready to get on that Freedom Bird, that's when the State Department said, nope, we have to vet the manifest once more.
Secretary of State Tony Blinken says he held up the rescue mission because the U.S. has no way of vetting those who are leaving Afghanistan on chartered flights right now. COVID in the classroom, that is the other big story today. As the kids head back to school, COVID cases among children are hitting record highs in this country.
The American Academy of Pediatrics reported the most COVID cases among children since the pandemic started, more than 250,000 last week. That topped the 200,000 cases reported the week before.
Correspondent David Begno, President Biden says it's code red on climate change during visits to storm-wrecked New Jersey and New York yesterday. He blamed global warming for the catastrophe caused by Hurricane Ida.
And so, folks, we got to listen to the scientists. They all tell us this is code red. The nation and the world are in peril. That's not hyperbole. Yeah. That is a fact.
The president says his $1 trillion infrastructure improvement bill will help safeguard against future storms. A magnitude 7 earthquake rattled Acapulco last night. Buildings shook as far away as Mexico City.
My family was still at the dinner table when the earthquake struck. It didn't feel like a small one because our ceramic floor was vibrating kind of like a magic carpet.
Adrian Bard in Mexico City, at least one person killed, a million homes and businesses lost power following that powerful earthquake. Robert E. Lee will ride no more in Richmond, Virginia. Work crews removing the country's largest remaining Confederate statue. A 21-foot-tall bronze statue of the Civil War general is coming down today. Reporter Shaquille Brewster.
This statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee has stood here in Richmond, Virginia for more than 130 years, and later today it will be gone. Now, new fencing was installed here overnight, and it will remain here until that entire statue atop that pedestal is removed.
Many see the monument celebrating the Civil War general as a glorification of the South's slave-holding past. Others see it as an example of cancel culture. Still to come on the Noon Report, face mask, face off. The suicide of a congressional candidate and the captain getting his ticket punched to Cooperstown. First, let's talk weather. Here's Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon. We're tracking a cold front set to deliver some locally heavy thunderstorms to parts of our region this afternoon. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, we will stay skywise. Kevin, thank you very much. Let's check the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania. Big day in Cooperstown, home of the Baseball Hall of Fame, Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
Yeah, Bob, the 19-month wait is over for the New York Yankees legend Derek Jeter and three other soon-to-be Hall of Famers. COVID canceled last year's induction ceremony, so it was moved to September of this year. Needless to say, it's standing room only in Cooperstown today as visitors from across the country descend on this quaint little farming community in Otsego County, New York. The 2021 Hall of Fame induction ceremony begins at 1:30 this afternoon. It's being televised exclusively on the MLB Network. Nearly 40 Hall of Famers have returned to Central New York to honor Derek Jeter, Marvin Miller, Ted Simmons, and Larry Walker at the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you for that. The Pennsylvania House is cutting short its summer recess as lawmakers mount a defense against the statewide school mask mandate. More from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
A spokesperson for the House Republican Caucus says the chamber will reconvene September 15th, about 2 weeks earlier than scheduled. This after parents, families, and administrators expressed concern over the new mask rule at school. Acting Secretary of Health Allison Beam signed the order last week that mandates masks inside public, private, and parochial schools as well as child care centers. Pennsylvania Senate President Jake Corman has filed a lawsuit deeming the universal mask mandate illegal. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you very much. Parents and students in Bradford County held a face mask protest yesterday in front of the county courthouse in Towanda, Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
Organizer Danielle Marr.
I don't understand why some schools in our state are willing to do the mask exemptions and others aren't. Like, why not leave it up to the parents?
Marr says she's not against mask rules, but thinks that should come from local districts, not Harrisburg. The Towanda Area School District says it risks fines and legal penalties if it does not enforce the mask rule in school. New York's mask mandate, the focus of a lawsuit filed by a private school near Buffalo. Christian Central Academy is suing for the right to eradicate that COVID safety protocol. Attorney Todd Aldinger.
Parents felt that the mask was greatly impairing their children's education and development. And we have about 20 to 25% of parents threatening to pull their kids out and homeschool them instead so they don't have to wear masks because they don't want their children to go through another year and having their education and social development impeded by wearing the mask.
A hearing is scheduled for next week on the fate of face masks at that private Christian school in Western New York. It's the first day of school today for two of New York's three largest school districts, Buffalo and Rochester. Heather Lee with WGRZ-TV.
COVID is obviously still very much a concern, especially when you consider that there are so many of those younger students that still are not eligible for the vaccine. So everyone will be required to wear a mask inside of all school buildings, no matter what your vaccination status.
31,000 Buffalo public school kids headed back to the classroom today. 26,000 students returned to school in Rochester. A former New York State congressional candidate committed suicide yesterday afternoon. The body of 41-year-old Kyle Vandewater, an Afghan war vet, was found in a cemetery in Poughkeepsie less than 2 weeks after he dropped his bid for the U.S. House. Vandewater was campaigning for a seat in the mid-Hudson Valley region. In Lackawanna County, Pennsylvania, overdose deaths from fentanyl use have doubled since just last year. District Attorney Mark Powell.
This is new, this is terrifying, and this is deadly.
It's pure poison. All right, it could kill you on the first try.
We've been focused so much on the COVID-19 pandemic that this opioid epidemic has just been able to rage and the fentanyl crisis has gotten worse.
The Scranton mayor says drug dealers are putting fentanyl in virtually everything from marijuana to cocaine to heroin. Local officials are calling on the governor to increase penalties for those who peddle fentanyl in Pennsylvania. Local landlords have joined a class action lawsuit challenging New York's eviction moratorium, which has just been extended until mid-January. The moratorium does now allow property owners to question hardship claims made by tenants. But that's not good enough, according to one local landlord.
But essentially, that piece of paper, 90% of the time, does not ever result in any money to us back.
Michelle McClelland is a property owner in Elmira.
So it is frustrating because I feel as though the responsibility has been put on us versus New York State.
New York State ranks last in the nation in its distribution of rent relief funds. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled in favor of landlords when it comes to these eviction moratoriums. Governor Hochul is taking a middle-of-the-road approach in the standoff between renters and property owners in New York. A pipe bomb explosion on the south side of Elmira today prompted police to evacuate several homes. Happened on Herrick Street around 1:30 in the morning. Apparently, the bomb went off in a backpack, which was containing several other pipe bombs. Authorities have the situation under control and say there is no immediate threat to that part of Elmira. A new pro-life law in Texas is ramping up debate over abortion access in Pennsylvania. The Keystone State has its own version of the heartbeat bill, legislation that bans abortions as soon as a fetal heartbeat is detected. The GOP-controlled General Assembly has also advanced legislation that would ban Down syndrome abortions. Governor Wolf, a pro-choice Democrat, has vowed to veto both.
Politics simply does not belong in a doctor's office. And there's absolutely no place for politicians or bureaucrats to come between a woman and her doctor.
And that means the fight to preserve unborn life in Pennsylvania will not be settled until next year when voters head to the polls to replace the term limited Tom Wolf. As we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11, a man who lost his brother that fateful day is nearing the end of his 537-mile walk from the Pentagon to Ground Zero. Frank Siller with Tunnel to Towers says the Never Forget walk will end where the nightmare began 20 years ago.
When I come out of the tunnel, I'll be looking at a lot different scene than what my brother did 20 years ago. I'll be looking 100%. At the Freedom Tower where he saw two towers where people were trapped above the fire line and were faced with a terrible decision. He saw hell on earth.
Siller's brother Stephen was among the 343 New York City firefighters who died that day.
So many people died that day, but my brother and first responders gave their life that day.
Siller's walk will raise money for Tunnel to Towers, an organization that helps the families of fallen first responders pay off their mortgages. The six-week walk from D.C. to New York comes to an end this Saturday, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We're coming up on 14 past the hour. Two-minute drill next. Here's Sonny.
Yeah, while it's Derek Jeter Day in Cooperstown, oh, and the rest of the Hall of Famers, Larry Walker, Ted Simmons, and the late Marvin Miller, Jeter's former team could use him. The Yankees' bats remain cold. The Blue Jays remain hot, winning their sixth straight in a 5-1 win in the Bronx. Steven Matz.
I think it's just the conviction of everybody. We kind of feel it. We, you know, we got a lot of confidence. We know, I think, what we're all capable of. And, you know, like I said, we're playing important baseball in September, and that's fun. It's exciting.
The Jays are two games behind the Red Sox for the second wildcard spot. The Yankees have now lost four in a row. Brett Gardner.
You know, unfortunately, we just haven't been playing good baseball this last week or so. I know for a few weeks and even a month or two, we were playing much better baseball. And You know, everybody talks about the winning streak, and obviously we played pretty well during those 2 weeks.
The Yankees still have the top American League wild card. In Miami, it was the Pete Alonso Show.
What a prospect this guy is. As he hammers this to left, there it goes.
That was his 100th home run. He later added a solo shot in the Mets' 9-4 win. The 26-year-old slugger reached the milestone on his 347th game, the second fastest in Major League history. The Mets are 4 games out of the National League East lead. The Phillies are 2.5 games out after being crushed by the Brewers 10-0. In St. Louis, the return of Albert Pujols, who after a 40-second standing ovation, did this in a Dodgers uniform.
He hooks this one in the air to deep left field. Albert Pujols in St. Louis again! You can't write this stuff!
A homer in L.A. 7-2 win. Elsewhere, the Pirates beat the Tigers. Cleveland falls to Minnesota. The Nationals fall to Atlanta. At the U.S. Open, 19-year-old Leyla Fernandez beat fifth-seeded Alina Svitolina in 3 sets to continue her unexpected string of upset victories. She's the youngest woman to advance to the U.S. Open semifinal since Maria Sharapova did it in 2005. She'll take on number 2-seed Arena Sabalenka in the semis. Daniel Medvedev is in the semis on the men's side. Buffalo's Jessica Pegula is in the mixed double semis. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiet.
All right, go, Jessica. Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, so much for a kindler, gentler Taliban. Calls for Fauci to resign and how Christians can live out loud their faith in a post-Christian world.
Successful nation building requires understanding what nations are actually built upon. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. So how do things in Afghanistan change so dramatically, seemingly so quickly? How did a decades-long frustrating stalemate become the greatest American foreign policy debacle in 50 years? A nation and a world has been left asking what went wrong. The most immediate explanation is the way that this withdrawal from Afghanistan was handled by the Biden administration, from pulling out troops before evacuating citizens and allies to abandoning the Bagram base. These details and others are hard to explain. A longer view explanation is that the war in Afghanistan ultimately failed because the United States shifted focus from fighting terrorism to nation building. Nation building can be formally defined as, quote, the process through which the boundaries of the modern state and those of the national community become congruent. When practiced, nation building is far more complicated than even that verbose definition. And attempting to rebuild essential cultural and institutional elements of another country rarely goes well. America's view of nation building has tended to change over the years. For example, in defending his recent decisions in Afghanistan, President Biden has spoken derisively of nation building, saying that it never made sense to him. That claim was fact-checked by the Washington Post. Apparently, he was once for it before he was against it. Many condemn nation building, not so much as wrong as impossible. Cultures run too deep, they say, for them to be changed from the outside. No weapon, no army is stronger than a people's will to resist. Just consider Afghanistan, twice now, Vietnam, or the collapse of European empires. On the other hand, it's also true that national borders can change. Languages do shift, religions reform, whole civilizations rise and fall. In the 20th century, for example, powerhouses like Germany and Japan went from global menace to responsible neighbor. Others, especially in American history, have seen nation building as necessary and as good foreign policy. A century ago, energized by victory in the First World War, President Wilson predicted a new dawn made possible by good old American can-do spirit in which democracy would clearly break out over the globe and the world would be transformed into our own image. It didn't happen. Instead, the world descended into totalitarianisms, both left and right. If non-interventionists tend to see cultural traits as immovable, always interventionists see them as merely cosmetic, about as enduring as a new coat of paint. Every society, however, is built on and around ideas, many so deeply ingrained, either by history or religion or both, that they go unspoken. Changing them isn't impossible, but it's not easy. In fact, the faltering state of freedom in the Middle East is as much of a failure to know our own history and ideas as it is to know theirs. The blessings we enjoy, like free elections and free markets and free speech, didn't, please forgive the double negative, come from nowhere. They came from thousands of years or more of cultural development, from kings and battles, revolutions and rebellions, ideas and new ideas, power struggles and false starts. In other words, politics alone and force alone cannot nation build. In Western culture, certain ideas derived from Christianity about human nature played an essential role. Biblical concepts about the image of God and original sin enabled thinkers, also influenced by the Enlightenment, to craft a style of government that saw both citizens and the state as dignified and also liable to corruption. Neither the Declaration of Independence or Declaration of the Rights of Man would have come to pass without Christianity and the Bible. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Another wet Wednesday, Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Showers and strong thunderstorms across parts of central New York, the eastern frontiers, and central and eastern Pennsylvania. Those storms can contain gusting winds and downpours and localized flooding. Farther west, clouds breaking for some sunshine, a couple of stray showers. Highs in the 70s to near 80, dropping towards 60 tonight. Then cooler tomorrow, clouds, sun, a couple of scattered showers. High temperatures upper 60s to the middle 70s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and lots going on this Wednesday afternoon, the 8th of September. Well, so much for a kinder, gentler Taliban. The head of the Haqqani Terror Network has just been named the new interior minister of Afghanistan under the Taliban. This is a guy who appears on the FBI's 10 most wanted list and has a $10 million bounty on his head. The terror leader is also said to be holding at least one American hostage, according to the AP. He's now in charge of law enforcement in Afghanistan, also serving in the Taliban cabinet. Four of the five Gitmo detainees let go in that controversial 2014 prisoner swap during the Obama administration. Florida Congressman Michael Waltz says a Taliban dream team is running Afghanistan today.
These are a bunch of genocidal thugs with a very warped interpretation of Sharia law and with very close ties to Al-Qaeda. This is going to be a repeat of what we saw in Iraq. The same Obama-Biden crew yanked us out too fast, too soon, recklessly, and you know, years later we're facing an ISIS caliphate the size of Indiana with an economy the size of Austria launching attacks around the world.
Of the nearly 50,000 Afghan refugees here in the U.S., more than a dozen show up on terror watch lists. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan says everything the Biden White House is doing right now in regards to Afghanistan is the wrong move.
It makes absolutely no sense, but nothing this administration does makes any sense. These are the same people who were in charge of foreign policy back when we had the terrible tragedy in Benghazi, Libya on September 11th, 2012. It's Tony Blinken, it's Bill Burns, it's Susan Rice, it's Jake Sullivan. I remember deposing Jake Sullivan when I was on the Benghazi Select Committee. They're the exact same people with their arrogance making the same kind of mistakes.
Newly obtained emails show our own State Department actively obstructing private rescue flights from Afghanistan during the Taliban takeover. The State Department says it was doing that because it has no way of vetting those who are trying to leave Afghanistan on chartered flights. Pandemic point man Dr. Anthony Fauci is under pressure to resign from one member of Congress after a report revealed that U.S. tax dollars were being used to back bat virus research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That's the lab in communist China where COVID-19 is thought to have been brewed up. Kentucky Senator Dr. Rand Paul says Dr. Fauci needs to go.
He has lied dozens of times. Usually he tells us that it's for our own good. But yes, he has dissembled. He has obfuscated. There's other nicer words. But he has definitely lied to the American public. And he should be held responsible. But not just that. The judgment that we should continue to fund this lab and that the virus in all likelihood came from the lab, I think is such incredibly poor judgment that he should be immediately removed.
Dr. Paul says Dr. Fauci's National Institutes of Health has funded no fewer than 65 research projects at the Wuhan lab. President Biden expected to outline a strategy tomorrow to beat back the recent surge of coronavirus cases. To say they have skyrocketed is an understatement. Dr. Ajit Jha at the Brown University School of Medicine.
And for people who are vaccinated, they may get the infection, they may get a breakthrough, but it's going to be mild. They're not going to end up in the hospital. But But for people who are not vaccinated, this is a very, very dangerous moment. People are ending up in hospitals in unprecedented numbers.
There were 250,000 cases of COVID in kids last week, the most since the pandemic began. While homeschooling has taken off in the era of COVID, the number of parents choosing to homeschool has doubled since the pandemic began. Kristen Robles, a single mom from Vermont, and is homeschooling for the first time.
Any parent out there, if you have children, you know your children. It's really about following their lead. And I had thought about homeschooling when my son was going into kindergarten 10 years ago, but I thought, how can I do this? It felt so daunting. Had I known the support and the simplicity that I could bring to it, and the excitement and the fun, maybe I would have been brave enough to try it way back then.
Experts attribute the rise in homeschooling to vaccine mandates and mask rules in school. Before COVID, 2.5 million American families were homeschooling. Today, that number is closer to 5 million. It's 25 past the hour. Next at noon, live it out loud, your faith in a post-Christian culture. Family Life's Martha Manikas Foster shares some tips on how to do that with Christian author, pastor, and church planter Jeff Christofferson. Here's some of that conversation.
So, Jeff, what are Christians to do when we look to share the Savior with others, but our language doesn't communicate and our faith is vigorously countered and even ridiculed?
We think, as Christians, that the more Christian-y we can make the culture, the more Christianity, as in the real deal, the Jesus-following, disciple-making stuff, will flourish. Actually, it seems to do better when Christians are forced to make a choice. Where is their highest allegiance going to be? And when it's mixed up in a sort of an American version of God and country and everything else, it gets a bit icky. And that's the missiological
term for it. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's power. There's a religion of power somehow woven into what we think of as the faith in Jesus Christ. Yes?
Yeah, well, I mean, what a world needs that has maybe just a jaundiced look at us is to see what an honest to goodness Jesus follower looks like. What are their priorities? How is their life different? The argument, the polemic that we're in today is no longer an apologetic of what is truth. That was the modern era. That is gone. Mm-hmm. No one is asking, you know, which is the true one? Is it the Hindu one or is it the Christian right. one? Very few people are asking that. They're asking, their apologetic is what works. And when by and large, the Christian culture's dysfunction parallels that of the lost world in terms of social breakdown and marriage and family and everything else, we can't really show them a gospel that works. And so somehow that transformed life encountered with a lost community is the power. It's always been that way. This isn't new. And so when my neighbor comes to my house and sees how I treat my wife, how my wife treats me, mm-hmm. how we work with our children, how we love them, how we respect them, and how we're generous towards them, and how we have a community of faith that is beyond a Sunday morning thing, mm-hmm. but actually envelops so much of who we are, it becomes a first century idea, like, how do I get it be a part of this?
Yeah.
Because people haven't changed. They desire that authentic community. They desire an authentic spirituality. They want that sort of connectedness. And so it gives us an opportunity to sort of incorporate his kingdom in every part of our lives. And so this is giving us an opportunity to rethink a lot of things.
So the mm-hmm. hope, then, you're saying, the hope is actually how we are Philippians 2 people, following Jesus, not thinking about ourselves, serving others because the Holy
right.
Spirit lives in us. But talk to me
yeah.
more about the Sunday morning phrase that you used.
Yeah, so what I'm suggesting is that the body of Christ was supposed to be an interdependent set of relationships that were permeable to the community. The community could actually see it and smell it. And it became this incense, this aroma, this fragrance that was attractive to them. And so that has always been the picture of the church.
I just want to push back for a second, but gathering together is still part of that community. We can be a fragrant aroma pleasing to God out in the community, and we're helping to build houses for the disadvantaged, and we're taking care of the elderly neighbor, and we're doing things that other people might not even want to stoop to do. But there is something about body life of us gathering. And it happens to be on Sunday morning. Is there a problem with that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's necessary.
Okay,
it's,
all right.
It's biblical. But if that's it,
and
a lot of times we use the words the church gathered, the church scattered a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a fan of that. It's not really a biblical idea. It's the church scattered. You know, it's like, okay, whatever happens during the rest of the week. But I think the church deployed is a better image.
I like it. I like it.
where we're not filling up our calendar exclusively with us being together, but we're actually being together in the community. Mm-hmm. And so it is gathered and deployed. Does that make a difference? I understand that. So I'm not just talking about you on your own, you know, trying to be a good Jesus witness at work.
Right.
I'm talking about you with fellow Christ followers engaging. So you're having a neighborhood backyard barbecue, and you bring three of your Christian family friends to help be a part of that, and then you bring your neighborhood to it. Mm-hmm. And so they get to see the whole thing and how you relate with one another.
And you've been listening to Christian author, pastor, church planner Jeff Christofferson. Now you can hear Martha's complete interview on our latest Inside Out podcast, Living Out Your Faith in a Post-Christian World. Go to familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A cold front is crossing the area today and bringing with it showers and thunderstorms. Some of those storms this afternoon will pack a wallop on the I-81 corridor south of Syracuse, so I want you to stay skywise. Behind the front, cooler air works in, pleasant air as we head toward the start of the weekend. For this afternoon, showers and strong thunderstorms across parts of central New York, the eastern frontiers, and central and eastern Pennsylvania. Those storms can contain gusting winds and downpours and localized flooding. Farther west, across western New York and western Pennsylvania, clouds breaking for some sunshine, a couple of stray showers. Highs in the 70s and near 80, dropping towards 60 tonight. Then cooler tomorrow, clouds, sun, a couple of scattered showers. High temperatures upper 60s to the middle 70s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally, from us at noon today, a herd of goats intended to act as live lawnmowers are back in custody after escaping and wandering off in a Michigan town. Boy, you hate it when that happens. Police in Southfield, about 15 miles north of Detroit, were tasked this week with rounding up those goats. They had been rented out from a local farmer to graze on residents' overgrown grass. The lawn mowing herd was eventually captured and returned to their rightful owner. Goats have become a popular eco-friendly alternative to traditional lawnmowers in recent years. And that's the world we live in. Wednesday, the 8th day of September. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.